This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 Joycast. In this Joycast, you'll hear a summary of the weekly program. Due to copyright restrictions, the music has been edited to make this Joycast possible. For more information about the music played during the show, please visit the blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Good evening, and thank you for joining me again for another week. Now, I've got to quickly say thanks very much to Vito and Bill and Penelope for a great show as well. Behind the scenes, I don't pay tribute to them enough on the start of the show because I'm usually just so frantic running into the studio and doing whatnot, but thank you so much. They do a fantastic show, so thanks for the show, guys, and of course, thanks to Rob for the news as well. Now, you might notice that my voice is a little bit different this week. It's a little bit more nasally, more so than usual, and it's probably because I don't think it's swine flu, but I don't know if, you know, being born in the year of the pig makes it me more susceptible to having swine flu or not, but I will do my best to keep just sounding normal. Now, this week on the show, we've got Gamelan Games, Harmonic Highlights and Indonesian Insights. I caught up with Urza ST, who's one of the co-founders of an Indonesia Opera Society, who basically sort of been pulling together different opera programs and highlights to sort of raise the profile of opera in Jakarta in particular. And I managed to sit down with him when he was visiting Melbourne this week and sort of just have a chat with him about what the society is doing and what's coming up in, I suppose, in Jakarta. So that's going to be very interesting. And of course, as well, I'm going to have the usual sort of tricks and antics and whatnot, sort of have the sounds that will just surprise and stun you. And this week, Jade Gulliver from Different Strokes has been insisting that I play this because I talked last week about a folk opera. The Decembrists produced a folk opera, and I've got a bit of a review, which apparently it's been received a little bit of a lukewarm reviews because it's something that people just aren't quite used to anymore these days. This sort of notion of having an album that runs from start to end as a full story and having characters that sort of develop and also sort of songs will respond to each other. You'll have a song that says, you know, this part, and then the other song will respond to it, and then, you know, it continues. And apparently the show's sort of been receiving lukewarm reviews for the start of it, but it's starting to pick up a bit of interest now, and people are starting to relax and get comfortable with the idea of a story in an album. Like, it's 75 minutes for the Decembrists, and the whole story runs through over 75 minutes. Now, Green Day, their album The American Idiot has now been revamped into a rock opera. Basically, the staging of it will, you know, have a story as well. And it's quite exciting. And Jade in particular, who's a regular listener of the show, so hi, Jade, is very excited. So I promised her I'd play something from it. And I don't know what it is about the show. It is, you know, an opera show. And usually people are very, you know, aware of the fact that opera is very proper and all that sort of stuff. And I don't know what it is, but I've managed to play a lot of F words on this show, and I've just completely lost count. I've stopped counting. Like, at one point I was going, oh, we've got to four, we've got to five. Now it's just been so many, and today we're going to add an extra one. So I'm going to play track four from the album American Idiot by Green Day, and it's Boulevard of Broken Dreams. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9.
I walk a lonely road, the only one that I have ever known. Don't know where it goes, but it's only me and I walk alone. I walk this empty street on the boulevard of broken dreams, where the city sleeps and I'm the only one and I walk alone.
Now, who would have thought that, you know, this angsty sort of, you know, early 20s soundtrack to my early 20s would come back to haunt me on an opera show of all things. Now, Green Day's album, American Idiot, I've just been sent some really cool trivia by Jerry, who's on front desk. And you can send through stuff as well to the station if you like. onair@joy.org.au is the email. SMS 0427 joy949, or you can give Jerry a call, 96992949, because clearly he's got nothing better to do but then send me trivia on Green Day. Now, apparently it's the most sold album that Green Day have produced, and in particular with the song Jesus of Suburbia is Billy Joe's favourite song of all his Green Day songs. So there you go. And of course, that particular track, track 4, which was something about suburbia. I've lost the CD. Anyway, the whole album is about, basically, it was sort of an anti-George W. Bush protest album. And it came out around about 2004. And it's interesting that now it's sort of been produced into a stage production, because all that sort of, you know, pro-change atmosphere in America is, you know, now sort of becoming can Obama do it sort of. But, you know, I suppose that the relevancy of the album itself, which in many respects it had 18 tracks, and a lot of it was sort of divided into multiple parts, sort of in the way that you sort of saw Bohemian Rhapsody sort of developed into many parts in the Queen's A Night at the Opera. And it sort of follows the story of two characters named Gloria and Christian. And it sort of reflects that sort of side of American sort of suburbia and the people who lived in suburbia in a sort of a post-Bush America. And I suppose that, you know, I just mixed my words, muddled my words there. I think that's the flu, but it's, you know, it's something worth boasting about as well. So there's the rock opera. It's going to come out in America, and it I will be following it with much interest, and hopefully we'll be able to give you reports on how things go. And of course Jade Gulliver will keep us up to date, and Jerry as well on front desk. Now I'm going to play an interview that I had this week with a very interesting man. He comes from Jakarta, and he writes for the Jakarta Post as well, Urdesa ST. He's you know, he was out here on the invite of Qantas to sort of have a look at the way that we do things over here, because he writes a lot about tourism and also about, you know, food and all that sort of stuff as well. So he's a very good critic. And one of the passions he has as well, which sort of he developed more than a decade ago, was opera. And he's sort of been trying to raise the profile of opera in Indonesia. And so I thought it might be worthwhile having a sort of a catch-up with him to sort of give us, you know, an update, I suppose, or just a bit of an insight into how opera is perceived in Indonesia. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Erza ST is a classical music producer from Jakarta, Indonesia, and is the founder of the Indonesia Opera Society, a company that brings out leading performers from around the world to perform in Jakarta and also to develop local talent and, of course, to bring opera to Jakarta. Thanks very much for joining me in the studio today, Erza.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
Tell me a little bit about the Indonesian Opera Society.
I was having that opportunity just fall into my lap by accident, because I was joining the Junior of Rotary Club, and then the club would like to do an anniversary, something spectacular, something very Chinese, and then I was raising my hand from the back row saying, like, why don't we do an opera highlight night? And since that time, I'm doing it for the club 4 years nonstop. And then after that, I'm just continue doing opera highlights and classical music concert until up to 4 years ago. Myself and two other founders, Sir Anthony Moody and Marie Moody, husband and wife, they sort of like giving me the push of let's do the opera, because otherwise somebody will. And you've been talking about this for since we know you, so it's time to actually crystallize it and do it. So we did, and the first production, we did the Impresario by Mozart. The reason why we choose Impresario by Mozart, because first, it's a small production, and it's not a grand opera. We don't have a proper opera house, and we only have a good standard concert hall, meaning the stage is not big enough to have the performance. We don't have orchestra pit. And even for the audience capacities, let's say 500 maximum, 500 to 800 maximum, which is nothing. So that's all the challenges that we have to deal with. Pretty much, I will say that it's like a magician bringing out the bunny out of the hat. That's how I felt at that time. making all that list, like things I have to deal with, and I'm just like, should I just do this or just laugh actually? But I did it 4 years nonstop until last year. My last production was with the Italian embassy. It was La Serva Padrona by Pergolesi. Again, it's not really something that the world of classical music consider as one of the great opera, but it is actually. It's just smaller scale. It's an intermission opera, they call it, because Pergolesi created this such grand opera that lasts for 3 hours. And during that era, in between that production, because they will have intermission break, and they will have this 30 to 40 minutes short performance to entertain. It's usually very funny. So we perform that, and it's only three character, and we even do a reduction to the orchestra. We do it with piano.
Right.
So it's very intimate setting. So we have to, that's what I mean by being a magician, because I have to explore all the rules in the opera book. How can we perform opera within the budget,
yep,
within the space capacity, within the limits of the technology that exists in Jakarta.
Sure. And in terms of being a magician, I mean, could you contextualize for us in terms of the cultural, how people in Indonesia consider opera? Because you were saying before that, for example, the government example doesn't quite support it.
Indonesian government does not consider classical music as part of Indonesian culture, because they always and keep on saying it that this is a Western culture.
Mm-hmm.
But I disagree, because when it comes to opera, we have, I think your listener and yourself understand, in opera you have aria, and then you have the aria, and then you have the recitative, the dialogues part. It's the same in Indonesian culture. We have this puppet performance, but the one that performed by live people using the whole gamelan orchestra, that we call it as an orchestra. It has the same recipe of opera production. They have the aria side, they have the recitative side. So it's the same, only one sung in Javanese, the other one sung in Italian.
Right.
So what's the difference, seriously?
And in terms of the gamelan itself, it influenced Richard Strauss. When he went to Indonesia, he heard the gamelan, and it completely changed the way he looked at opera as well. So
not only Richard Strauss, if you also know, Puccini was also very much impressed by that, by gamelan. Many composer back then was impressed to listen to gamelan, because gamelan was brought to Paris. There was this world exhibition, and since that time everybody just like infatuated with that.
Yeah. So Indonesian in effect has had a huge effect on the Western notion of opera anyway, so
subconsciously.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the music in terms of, you're saying that the singing is quite similar in terms of the way that you use your voice?
No, not the technique. The technique is totally different.
Okay.
But the concept is the same. There is the singing part that is taking usually very long, and there is this dialogue part, the recitative. So they have the same concept of aria, they have the same concept of orchestra, and they have the same concept of recitative, the dialogue. It's the same.
Yeah.
Only the technique are different. Singing in this puppet show in Javanese style takes a lot of the legato, so like like that, and long time, and they can hold their breath for like 5 minutes or more.
Wow.
And they're singing, the lady who sang is kneeling next to the gamelan orchestra. They're all usually plump, a bit heavy, and they can sing like that for 3 hours nonstop.
Right.
Yeah.
What about the stories? Do the stories sort of
the same
have similar?
This is another two similar between opera and our culture. The story is being adapted. The most famous one is the story of Mahabharata. It's the Hindunese epic that being adapted to our puppet show. And it's like watching the Lord of the Ring trilogy pretty much. It's that long. And the story is about good and evil, and there is war, there is love. So it's the same, which is opera doing that.
Yeah, of course.
If you watch Wagner, the Ring cycle is like that.
Ich bin die erste Sängerin, das klar ist ja, das klar ist ja. Nach ihrem Sinn, das soll er dienen, ich betreue ihn, ihn nicht bestreiten.
Nein, lassen Sie sich.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. I think that's quite a suitable, I think, aria to be playing when we're talking about a producer of musical concerts. That is from The Impresario, or, I don't know why I was going to... I was going to pronounce it in German, and as soon as I looked at it, I just went, I wish I hadn't said that. The Schauspieldirektor. It's a singspiel written by Mozart, and it was a production that was put on by the Indonesia Opera Society back in 2006, and it's a beautiful little piece of music, and as I was saying, it is quite suitable because in that particular aria, the trio, you have two ambitious divas come up to the impresario and saying, right, well, who is going to be the prima donna? You must decide. And I quite like the way it sort of ends with him just sort of going, look, just... piano, piano, pianissimo, just quieten down. I'm not going to tell you how it ends. It's a beautiful little piece of music, so go and hunt it out. I'll definitely post it up on the blog so you can hunt it out. The blog? It's joy.org.au/thefoolandtheopera is where the blog is, and you can find other little cute things and little videos to watch, and we kind of post up almost every couple of days. There's going to be something that you can have a look at that's, you know, opera related, so definitely check it out. Now, interestingly enough, that particular the Singspiel written by Mozart was noted to have very similar sounds to The Marriage of Figaro, and also the fact that it was entered into a competition, and it was competing against another Italian opera by Salieri. Now, if you've watched that movie Amadeus from the 80s, that's the Salieri, and that particular opera is called Prima la Musica, Poi le Parole. First the music, then the words, which also happens to be another excellent blog that you should definitely check out. It's written by Sarah Noble up in Sydney, and it's a very, very good blog if you want to know sort of what's happening up in Sydney, but also just Australian opera in general. Now, I'm going to continue with the interview with Ertsa ST from Indonesia Opera Society, and we talked a little bit more about the gamelan, and I will be playing a bit of gamelan music for you, but not what you'd expect, and also a few other things as well, and a couple of other trinkets and treats coming up. So for now, here is the interview highlights with Ursa ST. If you want to send it in an SMS, by the way, you can do so 0427 joy 949. You can also email on air at joy.org.au. there's also the telephone 96992949. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. I mean, the question would be, is there an opportunity, for example, for the sort of the two, I suppose, cultures to kind of come together, like an Indonesian opera, for example?
Yeah, we did that before.
I have.
Yeah, it's the avant-garde opera by a local Indonesian composer named Tony Prabowo in his opera called King Witch. It was premiered in New York because it was sponsored by one of the philanthropic organizations in New York. However, if you aware of the word of opera avant-garde, it means something that you can only watch once in your life. If you watch twice, you get depressed.
Really?
King's Witch is based on the famous Balinese legend. It's about the famous, not a she-devil, but a very powerful she-witch. And she has a beautiful daughter, and the whole village just afraid of her because the mother known to take a bath with the blood of the virgin from the village, something like that. So the opera is a folklore story like that, but it's an avant-garde opera. The music that Tony Prabowo used is the one that got no melody. In a simple way of saying, there is a word to it.
Sort of atonal.
Atonal, yes, that's the word I'm looking for. It's an atonal opera for an hour and a half. Yeah, it's very, very difficult. It's very stunning to see. The setting is amazing, but it's an atonal music that is difficult. I mean, some people like that. I just think that I'm not the right person. I'm very, very conservative. I mean, atonal is difficult to understand.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's difficult for a lot of people. What about in terms of the Indonesian Opera Society? Currently at the moment, you have cancelled this year's...
Not cancelled. Okay, the story for this year, it started from last year because that's how we prepare the opera. It should be a year in advance. I've been working with this composer named Ananda Sukarlan. He is a very famous maestro pianist. Actually, he came to Australia several times to perform. And he's also known as a composer. So we commissioned him to make his first opera, and it's called Why You Kidnap Our Son, based from the libretto of a famous literature named Seno Gumira Ajidharma, based on the same title of play, Why You Kidnap Our Son. It's setting back to the Suharto era during the famous riot in 1998. And this is one of the students who did the demonstration and got kidnapped, disappeared.
Right.
And the conflict, the story is only about the father and the mother, two people, conflict. And it's a bit heavy and tragedy. So we planned to do the world premiere last year, but get postponed to this year. But due to the financial crisis, we just sort of like waiting to the right time, because this is a world premiere opera. Ananda Sukarlan is world known composer and pianist, not only in Indonesia but also in the region as well as in Spain, because he based in Spain, and so the European also know him. So we don't want to make this first opera of him to be a disaster. And we're looking at the total budget of $80,000
right,
for a 2 days performance.
Sure. And in terms of the support, where does the support come from? Because I know that your work with the Jakarta Post sort of takes you all around the world. And is the money coming from business, private business that wants to bring in tourism to Indonesia? Or is it from, you know, from the government itself? Like, how do you seek support?
First of all, we have to get rid the word of government from the sponsorship. Doesn't right. exist. Indonesian government, that is, not the other government. Corporate sponsorship is still number one that we look for, because they are the one who actually have the budget for that, and they usually have this kind of budget for their social corporate social responsibility, which can be used to sponsor ours, because we're doing arts and art is neutral, and the corporate also is the one who have the budget. Some high-end product usually like to be associated with our opera. So the positioning is still like that. I mean, I know in all over the world now opera is going down and you can wear jeans, it's very casual. In Jakarta it's very high end.
Right.
I mean, it's something that it's like in the Middle Ages still. We still evolve. We're going to that direction, but in order to get sponsored, I have to positioning the opera to be something high end, because they're the one who have the money. Regardless the audience, I mean, the audience could be anybody. I have no classification on that. Government is not helping for sure, and embassies is, we do case by case. Some embassies do have the money. Sometimes the embassy came to us and said, we would like to do this and this, would you be interested? Like in the upcoming of 13th of October, the embassy of Austria in Jakarta contacted me and asked whether I would like to host the trio Mozart coming to Jakarta. And I said, well, if you are responsible for the actual cost, meaning the flight, the fee, then I don't mind, because I'm canceling my own opera. Yeah. It's difficult, but yeah, the embassy is still contacting me, because not many people who can organize concert in Jakarta, and it's quite a challenge to do that in Jakarta. It's not easy. You need to have your own market, you need to have your own follower, you need to have your own network who can support that, and to make sure that the concert is becoming the talk of the city.
Sure.
So yeah,
what can we look forward to in terms of, you know, hearing about Jakarta opera?
I think by the time we finally premiere it's Indonesian first complete opera. It's called Why You Kidnap Our Son, because this is a proper format of Western opera being done all in Indonesian language and Indonesian story. I think we will make a history here. We try to do something for the country, and that will be quite something to be shared around the world. And we plan to do another premiere in Singapore or maybe Australia, and that will be something fantastic to see.
Well, Erzsi, we look forward to hearing about it, and thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you, Dan.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that was Erzsi ST from the Indonesia Opera Society. And the particular opera that he speaks of, why did you kidnap our son? I will be posting up the details to that on the blog, joy.org.au/thefoolintheopera is where you can find it. And I've, you know, because in the world of blogging, there's quite a lot of information coming out there, and I've picked up Andy's, Ananda Sukarlan, who is the composer, I've picked up his blog, and I've got some information about the particular piece as well, which is quite interesting, because it's almost of a political story that I'm not too familiar with, which is, I think, you know, one of the things that opera has the ability to do is to sort of take little vignettes of people's lives and people's stories and sort of imprint them onto a very short, you know, sort of impactful story. I mean, in short, I sometimes mean 1 to 2 hours, you know, or in, if you're talking about Wagner, you're talking about a couple of days or 4 days, in fact. But, you know, the ability to distill an emotion and then put it into a piece of music, because music really is the language of emotions, and then be able to sort of deliver that, it's quite special, because it is able to transcend language. And even though it is an Indonesian opera, you know, you should be able to, by all rights, through the music, be able to come to understand the story. And in this particular case, it's a story of a married couple whose son, Satria, had been lost for a year and presumed kidnapped during the Suharto dictatorship. So it's kind of powerful stuff. And on the blog of the composer, he mentions the fact that, you know, it's not for kids, because there are some pretty violent scenes of torture, and it's quite realistic. So it's very interesting to sort of see what is happening in other parts of the world, and then sort of be able to share their story and understand their story. On a lighter note, Andy writes in his blog that he's a bit of a Britten and Stravinsky wannabe, which I find is quite quite funny. Now, I will make sure to post that up on the blog for you, joy.org.au/thefoolintheopera, so that you've got those details and you can have a look. And I will also make sure that, you know, when the opera does come to be finally put to production in Jakarta, I'll make sure that we get a copy and we'll be able to play you a little bit of the opera. Now, of course, speaking of Britten and speaking of the gamelan, I thought I'd play you a bit of music that sort of gives you an impression of what the gamelan is. Now, for those of you who don't know what the gamelan, like myself, I had to quickly learn about it. It's sort of like, there's two styles of gamelan music that we in the West are familiar with. And it's sort of, you know, there is the Balinese and the Javanese tradition, and both are sort of different in the way that they make the sound come out, which is Balinese is very extroverted and Javanese is more subdued and a little bit more lyrical. And the gamelan orchestras, you know, usually involve a lot of gongs, chimes, and other metal percussion instruments that sort of make these little, very light sounds, and very clear as well. And they were quite inspiring to a lot of, can't call them anything, but Western composers, I suppose. And Britten was one of those people who was inspired by gamelan and used it in his music, in particular in his opera Death in Venice. And it's, I'll give you a quick summary of the story. Basically, Death in Venice has, I can't remember if Britten used a composer or used an author, but the story is written by Thomas Mann, Death in Venice. And the original version, I believe, involved an author who is aging. He's sort of, you know, 50s and beyond. And he reaches Venice and sort of sees this beautiful young boy, young being around about 12-ish, I think. And he sort of becomes obsessed with this boy and follows him all throughout Venice, even though there's a cholera epidemic. And so he risks, you know, disease and all that sort of stuff to just follow this boy and be in his presence. And at one moment or another, sort of declares his love sort of silently, or not silently, but just whispers it out, you know, I love you. And it's quite a strange story, and it really deals with some difficult and, you know, that sort of sense of unrequited love is what it involves. And in this particular scene, because Tadzio, the boy, his sound, Britten uses his sound, the gamelan, as his sound, you know, this sort of exotic sort of sound to represent this very young, exotic, out of reach creature. And in this particular piece of the song, where the opera is just about to end, Auschenbach has just been sort of beckoned to by the boy, and in his final gasp, as he gets up to go to him, he has a heart attack and he dies. And it's somewhat pathetic. So I'm going to play you that bit of music, and you can listen for the music, the gamelan music, and that represents the boy Tadzio. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. And with a piece like that, you just need to kind of finish with a bit of silence and just respect the silence, because it just, it's so, I find the power of silence really powerful. It's, you know, it's something that, you know, we need to have more of. You know, we're just so bombarded with sound that occasionally it's nice to just have that piece. In that particular aria or part of the opera, it sort of tapers out as the young boy Tadzio just walks out towards the sea, and then blackout, which is quite a powerful sort of visual to have. Now, of course, the book was written, A Death in Venice, was written by Thomas Mann, and was inspired somewhat by the composer Mahler, who, his particular symphony, Symphony Number 5, in particular the Adagietto movement, was sort of the inspiration for the soundtrack of the film as well, which was made. And it's quite interesting that the film has replaced the Ochsenbach with, from originally an author in the story, into a composer in the film. So it's really interesting that they made that switch to make that connection with Mahler a little bit more obvious. And of course, the appearance of the character looks a little bit like Mahler as well, which is very interesting. Now, I had a chance to listen to that particular song, that the Symphony Number 5, and it's kind of got that similar sort of sense of melancholy. You kind of feel the music want to move somewhere, but then it just kind of tapers into this hopelessness. It's very powerful what classical music can do to you. So, having said that, I'm going to completely change the direction of the music and sort of just bring you back up to a sort of a happier space, because coming up we do have Bent Notes, and of course it's going to be jazz, and it's going to be beautiful jazz, and we've got some live jazz as well coming up. So I'll leave it to Kirsten to let you know what's coming up, but definitely stick around, because it's going to be quite a show, which will be quite fun. So I'm going to play you a bit of, because we played a bit of Mozart before, and I mentioned that it sounded like The Marriage of Figaro, I'm going to play a jazz version of a bit of music that is inspired again by The Marriage of Figaro. This is called Figure It Out. I love, you know, dodgy puns like that. And it's sort of based on the overture of The Magic of Figaro, and it's done by it's on a CD called Mozart Revisited Demande, done by Nouvelle Cuisine. I hate colds. They just don't, they jumble your words in your head, and they jumble it out on your tongue, and it's all weird. Anyway, I'm going to play you the song. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and a bit of jazz to get you into the next show with Kirsten, of course, with Bent Notes. And, well, that is the time that we have for today, and thank you so much for tuning in and being with us again. Next week, incidentally, is going to be our 25th episode, which is going to be quite fun. So I've got Lucy Shorrocks from Victorian Opera coming in, the Managing Director of Victorian Opera coming in. So it'll be quite interesting to have a chat with her and sort of see where Victorian Opera is heading as well as an organisation. But now, of course, because we played Mozart, I'll catch you next week. As Mozart says, same Fledermaus time, same Fledermaus channel. This has been The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera from Joy 94.9. You can find more Joycasts and the program blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. The Fool and the Opera is produced by Dan Vo and Jed Gilbert. Thanks to the support of Joy sponsors and members. Please help support it by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.